Welcome, friends, to the Enduring Gifts of Marvin Gaye podcast, brought to you by your 26-year listening veteran, Jessica. Join me as we celebrate these enduring gifts, the songs of Marvin Gaye. In each episode, I will share insights about the music and recount life experiences tied to it. I'm hoping to inspire you to take a first or your 500th first listen to these songs that are truly the enduring gifts of Marvin Gaye. Hi, I'm back. I'm going to tell you the total truth. I haven't moved forward with another episode from the Let's Get It On album because that album is so full of contrasts. We go from my song that I am the most excited of Marvin Gaye's, which was our last episode. Then we go to songs of Marvin where I can't listen to those songs just anywhere. Do you have that experience with some of Marvin's songs where it's like, Marvin, what are you doing to me? Because like, I can't listen to this song at work. Like, I can't listen to this song in public. I have to be alone in my room, you know, in the dark, getting ready to just know that I'm going to pour my heart out crying. Because I cannot just listen to this song anywhere, any time of the day. Like, any time that this song comes into rotation on the playlist, like, it has to be dependent on where I'm at if I can listen to the song. And so that is what we have to discuss on some of the remaining songs on the Let's Get It On album. And I'm not going there yet. I'm not going there. And I'm going to tell you the reason why, like, mainly that I'm not going there. It was last weekend and I'm still so sick, people. I'm so sorry. That really is affecting me a lot lately too. I have been sick to the degree where I am noticing that, like, days are going by and I am laying in my bed, like, and like, I'm drained of energy just laying in my bed. So last week I randomly, again, I'm loving YouTube for its randomness. Don't know how I came across this, but it was a Marvin Gaye interview, and I'm going to cite this man. It says right now, Paul Gambaccini. It was BBC, so over in England, they had an opportunity to interview him, Marvin, in 1976, and they broadcast it at that time. And they rebroadcast it the way that the interviews start. There's four separate interviews. And I think it was like a radio show, because you can tell that they had segments where they were talking to Marvin and then they would follow it up with playing Marvin's songs. And then they would come back into the interview with Marvin. And so they said that, you know, they met up with Marvin in 1976 and it was the intention to do 1 hour long interview, but it just, you know, spilled over into two separate hour-long interviews. And so they aired them in 1976. And then when this guy Paul was notified that Marvin had been killed, he just was saying Marvin was his favorite living singer. He was his hero. And he had just loved the opportunity to speak to him in 1976. And so, and to honor Marvin, they were rebroadcasting in 84. Was it 84, people? I don't know. It was 84, right? Yes, when he passed away, you know, just to honor him. So that's what is available on YouTube. And I saved these in the Marvin Gaye concerts, documentaries, interviews, Marvin Gaye movies, concerts, documentaries, interviews playlist. And they had all four. So you can listen to them in sequence and it's beautiful. And so I can't discuss a song. I need to discuss this interview with Marvin. And I love this interview with Marvin because I can hear Marvin. So it's almost like I could be conducting this interview with Marvin, and I'm hearing Marvin real time give his takes and his responses to these. That is the only way that I love to glean and get some information about Marvin Gaye. I want to hear Marvin Gaye speaking the words. I don't want your bullshit interpretation, because I have expressed this. So I guess that I just expressed it. Like, generally is my take that people that have the nerve to write about Marvin Gaye have a bullshit interpretation. I don't need it. You know what I mean? I don't need your color on what Marvin said. I would like to hear you ask Marvin Gaye the question and then hear Marvin Gaye's response. I don't need your color. Okay. So this 4-part little series of interviews, because they're, you know, once you take out the songs, it boils down to about an hour long continuous conversation that this guy was able to have with Marvin. And it's just amazing. And this guy says that, like, he was very excited about this opportunity to talk to Marvin. And so in the beginning of the interview, he went all the way back to the beginning. So I have just, like, I am serious. Like, I've been at a standstill. I have no energy. I don't want to get into the depressing songs that remain for me, just because of what they conjure up for me of life experiences from the remaining songs of Let's Get It On that I'm going to discuss. And this interview has just, it came out of nowhere, right? Like, I didn't even search for this. I couldn't have known to search for this. It just algorithmed, showed up in my suggested videos on YouTube. And I've been very affected by it. It's just like, even to hear some of Marvin's responses to some of the questions that were asked in a little bit, it was kind of like almost shutting me down on, like, some of the things that I have wanted to exalt of Marvin. And so let's just discuss all of it. So what I'm going to do right now, real time, is I'm going to re-listen to this interview. And then at portions of it, I will pause the interview and I will restart up the recording here so that I'm having real fresh takes. Because I remember, right, like, of course, I remember, like, cumulatively what I listened to last weekend. But I want to hear it again. And I want to just kind of speak to the individual sections of it, because this is a very comprehensive interview with Marvin. It happens in 76. And it's a very, very comprehensive interview with Marvin, just giving such amazing insight into who he was as a person and his takes on his career and his takes on how he had handled aspects of his career. So I want to talk to you guys about that. And so, like, this episode is, let's just talk about Marvin. Let's just talk about Marvin. I know I have always said to you, I'm not giving you Wikipedia and I'm not giving you a book report, but this feels so not a book report. It's going to be just me recounting for you certain topics that Marvin addressed. So let's go. Okay. I love this, and this makes sense. It will make sense. Let's go to the topic of Marvin and Barry kind of meeting each other and coming to be working with each other, right? I, in an episode back, explained how there was recounted by Barry something that I had heard about a Christmas party. Marvin's at the piano. He's tinkering around. Barry comes up on Marvin, starts trying to offer him some helpful little suggestions of tweaks that Marvin could make to this original music that he was sitting at the piano playing, and that Barry was received very coldly by Marvin. What Marvin says in this interview with this guy, Paul Gambaccini, is that Marvin refused to audition for Berry Gordy to get signed to Motown. And that makes sense. Doesn't it? Oh my gosh. Marvin was an Aries, and I am not into astrology. I don't know the characteristics of the different signs. Some people, like, are hardcore about astrology. Like, I was watching something, and somebody was just like, oh, last night, one night this week so far, they were like, it was the full moon in Taurus. I don't know what the fuck that means. I do not know what the fuck shit like that means, okay? Like, that's just too much. I don't have time to learn about all of that and to be, like, going by all of that. But I will concede that there are personality traits that tie to your sign. I'm going to explain it like this. I am on the cusp of my sign. I'm very towards the end of my sign. And I feel like because of that, there's like, I'd say 75% of the traits of my sign that I don't exude. I don't have those qualities. But therefore, the qualities that I do have, the traits of my sign that I do have, I think I have them in extremes. I get that. And I my dad is an Aries. My dad's birthday is very close to Marvin Gaye's birthday. And I don't necessarily know, like, what my dad's personality, you know, correlates to Aries, but I do know that Aries is like a very unique sign. Like, Aries is unique of the signs. And Marvin espouses, I have heard him many times point out the fact that he was an Aries. So I think that Marvin was very familiar with what about himself was tied to Aries. But I kind of think that, like, Marvin refusing to audition for Barry Gordy was a little Aries of him. Let me further explain Aries. My sister and I literally just hung up the phone and we were talking about her new son, and he is an Aries, because we were trying to figure out, is he an Aries? Like, I don't think that we actually confirmed if he's an Aries, but I think that we landed on he probably pretty much has to be an Aries, because he's early Aries. Like, he's either very late Pisces or he's just, like, maybe the first day of Aries. But she was explaining his little personality. And I was like, what's his personality like? Like, how is he now? So he's probably about, okay, wait, just explain to me when his birthday was. Cause I was even off by 2 months when his birthday was. And it, like, look, this is the thing about me. And I just have to tell all of the little babies and stuff. It's like, look, I kind of am sorry, but I'm not sorry. Like, the only people's birthdays on this planet that I remember are my two siblings and my dad. And other than that, I don't know people's birthdays full. And it's like, I don't have time to. I guess even get a calendar that I keep going every year. You know what I'm saying? So it's like, I really don't remember the days or even sometimes the months of people's birthdays. I'm bad at that. But I without fail, I know my sister's birthdays and my dad's birthday. Okay. So it's like, to know people's birthdays like that, I only have brain cells for them. The babies, I will always, you know, just send me a reminder, okay? But, we were figuring out that I think he's an Aries, dude. He's an Aries, and he's just got an aggressive little personality. he's very, very different from his brother. His brother is a totally way away from him, different sign. And they are just different little personalities, babies. So, that Marvin says, he's like, how dare I, right? He's like, how dare that I refused to interview for Barry Gordy or audition for Barry Gordy. But he was like, I stopped auditioning at a very young age as an artist. Here's something that I know Marvin is going to say a little bit later, because I've actually just been living off of this since I heard him say it. And that's why I'm saying I love that I heard Marvin Gaye say it. They got to a point in this interview where the guy is talking about the whole, I heard it through the grapevine, the fact that It's recorded by Gladys Knight and the Pips. It's recorded by Marvin Gaye. It's released with Gladys Knight and the Pips first, and then it's released Marvin Gaye's version. And how did that come to be, and why did that come to be, and was there a rivalry and all this shit? And I remember Marvin, he started by addressing, he's like, you know, I think that that situation kind of really got underneath Gladys's skin. I think that that kind of really made her feel, basically, I'm paraphrasing, keep in mind, I will be paraphrasing, but you know, like, made her feel a way. It made her feel a way. And why wouldn't it? He's like, he says it was unethical. He's like, it's unethical that, you know, a record company records songs under various artists and then releases them by various artists. He's like, that's unethical. So yeah, she had every right to feel a way if she felt a way. And that's what he says. He thinks that it made her feel a way. But he was like, she kind of also perpetuates this story about, you know, the way that it went down. But, and then he made it very clear. And Marvin was very matter of fact in the way that he was addressing this part of it, is that he had absolutely no control over that situation. And he was explaining that he actually recorded it first. And, you know, Whitfield was the producer, had Marvin record it. Whitfield presents it to Barry wanting to get it released. And Marvin explained that more than likely at that point in time, there was some bumping heads going on between Marvin and Barry. Marvin says he was probably giving Barry some problems at the time. And based on that, Barry, you know, just kind of, and then if you've seen that Motown documentary, you know, like, the way that they decided which songs would get released is they had a vote, you know what I mean? And it's possible that the Marvin Gaye version of I Heard It Through the Grapevine, which here is a Trivial Pursuit little nugget of knowledge for you, is the highest selling song under the Motown umbrella of all time. And when Norman Whitfield had freshly recorded that with Marvin and took it into the room to be voted on if that could be the release for the week, it was, no, we don't think that's a hit. We don't think that's going to work. No, we pass. And so Marvin was explaining, you know, a part of that, he had a suspicion, was that, you know, Marvin was giving Barry some issues at the time. And, you know, a part of that was that, you know what, your stuff gets to sit on the shelf for a little while. But this was what Marvin proceeded. And watching that documentary, I totally understand the process here. Marvin explains, though, Whitfield felt like he had a hit on his hands. So it was like, all right, well, fuck. If I can't get my hit released on Marvin Gaye, I'm going to go find some other artists to record it for me. Maybe I can get it released on them. So then he goes and he approaches Gladys Knight and the Pips with it. He gets them to record it. He takes it into the room. It gets voted on. It gets released. Gladys's in the Pips version gets released first. Later, Marvin's version gets released. But Marvin specifically addressed the fact that that was unethical, flat out, that his version would get released if their version had been released. He's like, that's unethical of a record company to do that. But he was like, I had absolutely no control over that. And that's going to kind of segue into a really big topic that I want to cover. And I loved to be able to hear Marvin's verbalization of this. But the thing that Marvin said that I loved was another thing later in the interview that the guy throws out to Marvin, is, you know, using I Heard It Through the Grapevine as an example. You know, same song gets recorded, same producer, multiple artists. Did that ever make you feel a way that, you know, producers would be, you know, just kind of like playing the field among you artists with their material? And this is what I love that Marvin said. He said, with such certainty and confidence, but yet not arrogance. He just said, no. He's like, I did not ever worry about that. He's like, I feel like I'm heads and shoulders, or head and shoulders above the rest. You know what I mean? He's like, I would not worry about that. He's like, I am not insecure. I have never been insecure in this business. So he's like, he wasn't fazed. Like, he didn't give a fuck if, you know, you're going to record your song on me and then somebody else, like his version, he's not worried about what somebody else's version sounds like. Live your life like that. Live life like that. All this social media bullshit. Live life like you're not worried about. I have never been insecure in this life. Business, replace that with life. I've never been insecure in this life. I don't give a fuck what somebody else is doing. If I did it, I'm good. So I love that. I love that he said it, but in a, listen to him say it, it doesn't come across as arrogant. So yeah, I think we're good for this far. Let me keep listening and I'll hit you back. I love Marvin Gaye, dude. It's like when you just get to hear Marvin in an interview, you will love Marvin Gaye, dude. Okay, so this dude just asked Marvin, like, what was his first single that was ever released? And he specified a song, which actually is a song that comes off of Marvin's second album. And Marvin says, yeah, that might have been it. And then he goes, now let's go into what we know. He's like, no, I think the first single was a song called Let Your Conscience Be Your Guide. He's like, it was a horrible song. And he's like, and Barry Gordy wrote it, by the way. And he's like, oh, but Barry will probably say that I wrote some horrible songs in his next interview. He's like, so it's okay. But yes, okay, let me listen a little bit further, because right after Marvin said that much, this interview literally goes into starting to play some songs. They actually play the song that the guy thought was Marvin's very first single. So that's what happens in this interview a little bit. Like I said, they'll talk for a little bit and then they follow it up with a song. They don't play the whole song in this YouTube video, but it does cut off a little bit of the dialogue. So I'm going to tell you what I'm going to pause this to listen a little bit further to is Marvin goes very in depth into describing his take on his vocal abilities, first project, first years. And this is what I was saying kind of made me feel a little bit shut down on how much I try to exalt him. So I will explain that when I come back here. Hold on. Okay, what I will say, at this part of the interview, the guy, like I said he started from the very beginning with Marvin's career. And so he was asking Marvin about, like, even groups that he was in before the moon glows. Like, that's how far back he was going in Marvin's career. And then he was taking Marvin through, oh, this hit, this song that you had charted at this point, did that change your life? I think he was saying to him, Pride and Joy was your first top 10 hit. Did that change your career? Did that change your life? And Marvin said, no, that didn't change my life. And he was like, and, you know, he generally kind of looked back at that early point in his career. He didn't really look back on it with much happiness. He was like, it was sad times. And so, and then they cut to a song and he didn't really elaborate on that. But then they come back and the guy was asking him if Smokey Robinson, like, once Smokey produced Ain't That Peculiar, and he mentioned another song with him. If that kind of, how did that work and all of this? And Marvin was just, he basically said that Smokey saved his life. And he was saying that, you know, there was a point that around that point in time, the early 60s, right, that Marvin just didn't have any motivation to like produce on himself. He said he was writing, but the environment there at Motown, keeping in mind, people, I am paraphrasing, okay, was just so competitive, and that really the focus as far as producers wise was Holland Dozier Holland, Smokey Robinson, and he named some other people, and he was just like, but they were the ones who were really being focused on. So he said, Marvin, it was hard for him to feel a confidence in his own pen, his own writing pen, his own ability to pen a song and then want to take it and present it and say, hey, can I record this? Could somebody else record this? He just said it was really hard for him to have a sense of confidence with all of the competition that there kind of was around him in that environment there. And now I'm just from remembering, I'm going to go a little bit further because this actually blew my mind. And it just really speaks to the business of the business that Marvin was in. You know what I'm saying? It's a very interesting mix when you would think about this. Just think, people, like people who are artistic inclined. Are you a painter? And I did hear Marvin one time just say, like, an artist. And he was like, you can be a painter or you can be a musician, right? It's still an artist. It's art. You know, people who are artistically inclined like that, that is like a side of your brain. That is a strength of your brain. And it's like a facet. There's other sides, right? It's just like school. Are you more the English type, or are you more the math and physics type, the math and science type? I will just, let me throw this little tidbit in about myself throughout school. So I've already explained, stressed the fuck out throughout all of school, but that was because I was achieving school on like this level, right? Like just from the begin, from like kindergarten, it just was always weird to me. Like I was always being pulled out of my classroom full of kids to go take a little special test. Oh, like today you get to come and sit in the room and take this little test, because they were just always testing me. And then the results are always coming back and, oh, you're testing in the 90 percentiles, right? Like the 90 number percentiles on shit. And it was just like, oh, okay, whatever. You know, this shit was happening to me throughout all of young elementary school. And as I got further into elementary school, then there would be more and more people in the room taking these tests with me. But like, we were just always getting tested for shit. And we were being identified as gifted and talented and shit. And then by the time that I got into junior high, they really fucked me over. The first time that they really fucked me over with this shit, it was the end of seventh grade. Like, I really want to say, like, this either the last day or the second to last day of seventh grade. So all of the different classes of seventh grade, we all took eight. This was like the one time that this ever happened. We all took a test at the same time. But it wasn't one of those standardized tests, okay? Because everybody had to take the standard. It wasn't that. It was just some little fucked up tests that they were making all of the seventh graders take at the same time. Like the end, the last, second to last day. Let's call it the second to last day of the school year. And it was a math test. And there were a lot of questions on this math test that were plain the fuck math questions that we hadn't learned this math yet ever. Like there were math questions on this test that we had not ever yet been taught how to do the math to be taking this fucking test. And so I just remembered like fucking with this test and I'm like, what the fuck are these questions? This is not multiplication and this is not division. And what the fuck is this? So we were just like having to fuck with this test. Okay. So based on the results of that fucked up test, oh, there were, call us 200 seventh graders, right? And there were four or five of us that we tested right. Let me say air quotes right on that fucking test, that the next year, that four or five of us out of the 200 had to skip ahead a year in math and we were taking algebra right away. All the rest of the 200 seventh graders got to that year take pre-algebra and they got to ease into that shit. Oh, those four or five of us, we had to jump ahead and we had to, now we were taking our math classes with older students. So for the next couple of years, the math that I was taking was always a year ahead and I fucking hated that shit because I am not a math and science strength person. I don't give a fuck about that shit. Okay. I never gave a fuck about that shit. They always talk shit to you. You got to take a math and a science class. I don't give a fuck about that. And I didn't give a fuck about it back then. And I didn't give a fuck about how much more money I'd have been able to make because I was learning how to do this fucking math, dude. I hated the fact that they made me expedite my math learning intake. Well, because they did that, though, by the time that I actually got into that physical high school that I was telling you about, I only had like 2 more math credits that I had to take in order to graduate. I had 3 years of high school, but I only had to take 2 more math credits. And please believe me, that first year that I got into high school, I was still in this fucking accelerated math class. And we were getting into doing like shapes and shit, shapes in the air and shit. That's what I fucking hated about math. It was like, you could never visualize this shit. It was all these points and based on the points and the numbers and shit, it was supposed to make a shape. It was like, fuck this. So I took that last year of accelerated math. And then point blank and period, I stepped out of those accelerated math classes because I finally got an understanding that, oh, I only need so many math credits in order to graduate. Oh, I don't have to stay on this accelerated path that you guys have been forcing me to be on. Oh, fuck this. I stepped out. I stopped taking those accelerated math classes with the rest of my peers for like the next 2 years. They kept and kept and kept on going. And I stopped that shit. But it's just to say, like, if you're an artistically inclined person, you're inclined toward that. You're not inclined toward this more technical bullshit type of thing. And so, hold on 1 second.
Okay. I had to go get my food. Sorry. I order food. I know how to cook. And I've actually been cooking since I've been sick more. I have to be making myself chicken soup. But I prefer to order DoorDash. Would you guys mind if I mukbang with you? Because I'm starving. But yeah, it's just like when you're an artistically inclined person, that's what you're inclined to, right? I was more inclined. I told you, I'm a writer. I was inclined toward English and writing and history, and I enjoyed those things, and I excelled at them. It just kind of sucked that they determined that I needed to also expeditedly. I didn't excel at math. You know what I'm saying? Like, that was actually torture for me. It was torture for me being in an expedited pace schedule with my math intake because math is not my strong suit. I fucking hate math. And like, because they made me expedite my intake like that, I made the decision. I stopped at Algebra 2. Fuck that. And I actually, when I think about it, I think that we were getting into algorithms and shit. And I was like, what the fuck is an algorithm? And I don't get it and I don't see it. And we're always looking off into space, but like the number, like I didn't have time for it. I wasn't even doing drugs. Do you know what I'm saying? I couldn't do it. And so I determinedly stopped. It was with pride that I stopped because it was just finally me taking a handle on that shit and saying, fuck this. I don't give a fuck if I'm going to get a better job in life and make thousands of more dollars by the time that I die because I learned how to do this fucking math. So like on purpose, I did not learn how to do trigonometry and I do not know how to do calculus. And I fuck that. Okay. So, but yeah, it's like, okay, so there's math, science, English, history, but then there's art. And when you're an artistically inclined person like that, to just think about this was Marvin Gaye, okay? The degree of gift of art that Marvin Gaye has. And yet, you know, there's a business side to that as well. And Marvin was really hurt. This is my take. This is not necessarily Marvin's words at any point throughout this interview to state it like this, but it was my take from listening to him discuss this process of his career was that he was kind of hurt by the fact that because he was an artist, because he was a musical artist that was signed at a record company, or the structure of that process is, you know, contracted and very limiting for the rights and privileges
monetary privileges, monetary gain privileges for himself as the artist because of the structure of that business. And so here's what I'm just going to skip ahead. And then as I listen, I'll come back through and I'll give specific examples of what he's talking about. But at the end of the day, which unfortunately, right, it's like, you don't know how much time you have on this planet. So you could be making some decisions at a younger age, but you don't know that you're not going to have 70 years of life, right? You don't know that you're only going to be here for a day shy of 45 years. And he, based on like the pain of being an artist, but being confined and constrained in the structure of the music business, he didn't have the freedom to just, oh, I'm gonna write my hundreds of thousands of songs that are in me, and I'm gonna freely share them with you as this record company, and I'm just gonna let them be recorded by me or others, and based on that and the success of them, because I wrote them and they're mine, I get to receive the right amount. I get to get all of the financial gains and rewards from that. It's just, that's not the way that business works. And so, but it was really interesting. It was like, just kind of realistically, he had a very kind of a more kind of a realistic mindset that I think kind of controlled his approach to that business, which influenced how much of his art he shared with us. Like at the end of that's exactly what it boiled down to. He flat the fuck out said he was one of the most prolific writers of anybody that you would come across. But okay, and I'll tell you what I remember that this interviewer pointed out, and this ties to a number that I've thrown out in an episode before too. I said by the time in 71 when Marvin releases What's Going On, I don't know if he has written and released 9 songs up to that point. Now, Marvin exactly explained why that was. So the guy, as he's interviewing Marvin, says he believed, the correct him if he was wrong, that If This World Were Mine was the very first song completely, just solely written by Marvin, credited as written solely by Marvin, that he recorded. Marvin explained that right there, that fact right there, was because Marvin simply couldn't really afford to give Motown too many of his solely written by him songs under the structure of contract, financial gain, ability that he had, and his relationship with them. Here's one really true thing, and I'm just going to say this. This is me. This is not doing any research. That I have pulled up in front of me, but it's just a knowledge kind of overall of the music industry and, you know, just kind of specifically Motown too. I mean, I don't really mean to give an offense specifically to Motown, but it's, I'm going to speak about that because that's where Marvin Gaye recorded for 99% of his career, right? So that's why I kind of would have a little bit of a knowledge of it. It's that it wasn't the most generous financially to its artists, point blank, period. But I don't know that that's like more of a blemish on Motown than the music industry, period, to this day. Today is November 15th. Check the headlines in the news, right? Like, this is a very relevant topic right now. It's the structure of that business. It's a very business-influenced situation that artists have to be
put into in order to be their artistically inclined selves. When you just think about that, the ability to write a song, right? There's like, in this day and age, there's so much shit that's talked about. You're a popular artist or whatever, but do you write your own songs? Well, here's a question just to everybody in the general public. Could you write a fucking song? I can't think of trying to sit down and write a song. And I've enjoyed writing and creative writing and all of that shit. But to like actually think about writing a song, I just can't even imagine doing that. That's an inclination. That's a gift that you have. So to be a person of that gift, and kind of in order to have an ability to get your gift out, you know, make use of your gift, do good with your gift, you are a minded person. And in order to have other people be able to receive your gift, you have to become involved in such a business that is not generous toward you. And especially not when you're a brand new artist that don't nobody know who you are. I mean, to this day, it's rare, few, far, and in between, the artist, the music artist, that genuinely, right out of the gate, get to negotiate something that's very lucrative financially for themselves, right? That's why the main, you know, stigma these days is like, oh yeah, you can see all these people wedding. What, they're stunting. They're renting this, they're renting that. That makes them look like they have this and they have that. But in reality, there's no way they can really afford that shit. Or they, you know, if they do, they get so indebted to the company, the record company. You know, it's like they're... It is, unless you are so business-minded and business-focused and business-savvy and you have to pay dues, but then you could get to a place where you are negotiating. And you know what? This is the kind of... I'm maybe talking some shit right here, and I'm being a little bit maybe controversial and a little bit maybe could be perceived to be disrespectful. But here, I'm just going to say this is my take, right, from that Motown documentary. It's no secret, right, that Berry Gordy is a humongously rich man. And it's no secret that Smokey Robinson is a humongously rich man. But let's be real. Okay, we know the roster of people at Motown. I don't know. Is Stevie Wonder humongously rich too? I don't know. I don't know if that's what Stevie ultimately got to the place of being able to negotiate for himself. I know that Stevie got a lot of artistic, creative freedom. And I would really hope that based on that and how long Stevie Wonder has been in the game and how, you know, rich his catalog is and how, you know, because of how artistically in control of his catalog that Stevie Wonder is, I would really, really hope that Stevie Wonder is a humongously rich man. But, and like I say, I'm saying this, yes, it is about Motown, but I'm not trying to say that that's more of a blemish on Motown than any other part of the record industry. But it's like I said, let's be frank, Berry Gordy and Smokey Robinson, they reaped a lot of financial reward out of Motown. And guess why? That's because of the way that they structured their take out of things. What it was very clear that Marvin was expressing in these interviews is that he didn't have the same level of respect shown to him, such that his financial take and reward could be the same. Throughout this interview, the man, it's like he's revealing to Marvin, oh, that single that you had sold millions of copies, how did it affect your life?
And Marvin's like, wow, this is news to me. He's like, based on my royalty check, it wouldn't have indicated that it sold millions of copies. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's facts. It's not necessarily personally talking shit against those who structured their financial rewards for themselves to be very beneficial and rich. But, and like I said, it's that business. It's just kind of the structure of that business is that those artistically gifted minded people who they want to just be able to be true to that, they, in order to have that access and that exposure, and, you know, be well known for it. I mean, because of course there's the independent route and all of that stuff, but there's benefits that come with being connected to a large record company, right? You got your distribution, you got your, just the financial backing to get your projects funded and all of that stuff. But it's just like, I don't know, like it's paying dues and it's just having a lot of savvy to structure your shit such that you, as that artist who is just blood, sweating and tearing out these artistic projects, that you get to reap the financial rewards, the full financial rewards from all of that. Some people do. Like, and that's the thing. It's like, yes, you blood, sweat, and tears. You can have a monumental, huge project, and there are financial rewards to be reaped and received from that. But it depends on your savvy of that business and like the dues that you've paid, whether that's you. And so, yeah, it's like Smokey Robinson, Berry Gordy of Motown, given facts. Very rich men from all of that blood, sweat, and tears that they put into those years. But that was what Marvin was making clear, is that he just never really felt like he was shown just a respect via his financial rewards and gains from his blood, sweat, and tears at that company, through his projects, through his work, to be on the same level. And so that's where I really do feel like he's talking about this pain in those early years came from, and how that man says, if this world were mine, is what I can recall being the first song that's ever penned as written solely by Marvin Gaye that's released. And Marvin says, I couldn't afford to give Motown too many songs that were written just by me. He's like, I am as prolific of a songwriter as you would ever come across, but I couldn't afford to just give them everything. Right? Because it is. It's like, how beautiful. Okay, so this is the exact point that I'm making, people. How beautiful, pure, gentle, delicate, gorgeous of a love song for life, for the rest of life, is If This World Were Mine. And yes, that is 100% Marvin Gaye. But for the level of respect that Marvin felt that he received for that, for contributions like that, for the amount of money that, yes, to this day, do we know that song? But what was Marvin's financial cut of being able, and that's all him, that's purely his art, purely his gift, purely coming from him. But and the money to be made, yes, money to be made from that, but what his cut and share of it was capable of being based on that business pain that caused him pain. That's a fact of like being shown your worth, the amount of respect that you are being shown. And just over and over and over the years, he just didn't feel like he was shown the respect that he deserved. And like, and it is, it's just, it's that business. Cause like, I will state it again, I'm not trying to say there's more of a blemish on Motown, but than the industry at that time, clearly, as we're right. It's like, that is getting into that industry as an artist. It's not really set up the most to your advantage. Clearly, what would make you feel a way about that too, though, is like kind of when you really get down to it, at the end of the day, though, you do have Berry Gordy. And then, and if you watch that Showtime documentary on Motown, it's clear Berry decided that he was going to share and share alike with Smokey Robinson. Like, it was a possible thing to do if he decided to do it. And, you know, that just couldn't, I guess, be extended to everybody. There were a lot of people on that roster at Motown. And it would just be, I could see, you know, I can see Marvin's perspective crystal clearly. Okay, another example. And I'm sorry, let me just clarify. When I threw out that term before, is it okay if I do a mukbang with you guys? You know, if you don't know it, that it's eating while I'm talking to you. Do you watch those on YouTube? My sister, I think I very much offended my sister one of the last times that I talked to her, my other sister. She was telling me about this mukbang lady that she watches all the time. And this lady has like millions and millions of followers, and she makes her own sauce and she's always eating seafood and shit. And I was like, okay, so like I've watched mukbangs before. So I checked out the lady and I was just like, no. And then she just said, to each his own. I was like, okay. I think I offended my sister a little bit, but my sister was going so far as like the sounds and the smacking. And she's like, there's just something. She's like, I don't know why, but I just like it. And I'm like, yeah, okay. Well, I do not. So I have some nerve trying to ask you guys to let me do it right now. But it's actually like a whole little niche of things. And it's more to be seen, not just heard. I know, but I, like I said, I'm so sorry. I'm starving here. I'm sick and I need to eat, right? But another thing that Marvin just said to this guy, well, okay, hold on. The guy brings up the first duet album with Mary Wells, and he asks, whose decision was that? Whose thought process was that? And the way that Marvin starts to answer it is that he just says that he was not happy with many of the decisions that were made in the early part of his career, because, and now I'm paraphrasing, and Marvin didn't really even say this at all, but it's like, therefore, because he didn't have control, you know what I mean? Like, he was young, he was a newcomer, so he didn't have a whole lot of say in his career, right? And he was told what to do. And we already discussed that. That's a whole episode. You know, I think it's the episode 7 with Tammy and Marvin, where we just kind of discuss Marvin's whole duetting history. But he was just like, yes. And so the guy was like, well, you know, and check this out, though. I love that this man said this, because I pointed this out to you guys in that episode where we're discussing, like, how come did Marvin make that very first duet album with Mary Wells? Well, they released 3 albums on Marvin in 1 month. It's like he's doing the jazz albums. They don't sell anything. They have to do like something to remind the public that Marvin has had some hits. So they throw out a greatest hits album on him too. And then they did like one, I think they did that live recording album, but there was like, it's 1 month in April in a year, 63, 62, 64. They released 3 albums on Marvin Gaye in the month. And this man says, well, you know, you and Mary Wells were the only 2 artists at Motown at the time that had greatest hits albums. He was like, maybe it was just a commercial thing. And Marvin says, well, of course, yeah, of course it was a commercial thing. And he's like, that tends to be, and of course, I'm paraphrasing, you know, that tends to be what drives all the decisions in the record industry. Like, he's like, unless you're not a commercial minded person. And he's like, and I don't know any of those. So it was just like, yes, of course it was a commercially driven thing. And then Marvin, to be generous and to be fair, he did say that, you know, now looking back on it, he realizes that he should have been grateful for a lot of the decisions that were made about his career in those early days, but he was just being rebellious. And he just, you know, he didn't agree with some of the things at the time. Okay. To where though? I'm going to try and be couth here because I don't typically just talk with my mouth full of food. I wasn't raised like that. We weren't allowed to talk with our mouths full.
here's where this is what I'm saying. Like, it almost breaks my heart and it almost tears me down and it almost like makes me feel like I need to stop what I'm doing. I will say, okay, by the point that I'm about to share this with you guys, I'm at like 10 minutes and 50 seconds into this first only 14 minute long YouTube clip. And like I said, okay, I didn't search for this. It just showed up in my suggested videos. So, you know, YouTube knows I'm obsessed with Marvin Gaye. They suggest that I watch this little 14 minute clip. Well, when the man introduces it, like I said, he explains in 1976, he got an opportunity to interview Marvin Gaye. At first, it was supposed to only be an hour long interview, but they were having such a good time and the conversation was flowing so easily that it turned out to be a 2 hour long conversation. They broadcast it in 1976. They're including the music in between. So like, that's what I'm saying. I think when you take out the music, between the two separate hour-long episodes, it really is about an hour's worth of Marvin Gaye speaking. And that's the reason why we have these four YouTube videos that total about an hour total, because it's mostly Marvin Gaye speaking. But I didn't realize that YouTube had available all four of these videos. So I am listening to this one and it's literally even 14 minutes even. And I'm at 10 minutes and 49 seconds and I've got it paused right now because Marvin is talking very critically of himself and his vocal abilities in those early days. The man's trying to get a little bit more at like, what's Marvin's beef with the Mary Wells project? And Marvin just says, well, you know, it's like, were you not happy with the songs? Did you not enjoy What's the Matter with You, Baby? And Marvin says, I didn't like my vocal performance on the song. He was like, I couldn't sing back in those days. Keep in mind, this is 1976. We know, I Want You's got to be released by that point. So Marvin's sitting on I Want You, and they're going back in time and they're talking about What's the Matter with You, Baby. And Marvin says he couldn't sing back in those days. He says he knows that he is 50% vocally improved on himself in 76 from where he was back in those early days. And he just says that he couldn't sing. Like, he is not satisfied with his vocal performances back in those times. And I was just sitting here and I'm like, oh, well, Marvin, I love your voice from back in those days. You're still Marvin Gaye to me, like at any given point in your career. Yet, let me let Marvin keep speaking, because then I felt a little bit better. And then after I felt just this little tiny, teeny bit better, I was able to see that there are three more videos that make up this conversation with Marvin Gaye, and we're going to get so much more insight. So here we go. Okay, I'm quite satiated here. I just had some Maggiano's Taylor Street Baked Ziti, and they give you the bread. So I'm finishing up the last few bites of my bread here. Benit. All that by any means. Got half of it left here, but okay. I'm not so distracted with hunger now. Okay, so let's go to what Marvin said, and I just listened to him say it again. He said he could not sing. back in those years, hold on. What I am going to do right now is get the Marvin Gaye Collection book. It's sitting right here. I didn't have to go far. And we are going to look at the chronology here. And so he is talking shit on himself up through the Mary Wells album. So yes, let us look at this. Let me be very clear to you what I was saying about the three albums that are released in 1 month on Marvin Gaye. It is recorded live on stage, released August of 1963. Oh, no. Okay. That's not the one. That's released in August of 1963. All right. Now we go to April of 64. They release When I'm Alone, I Cry. It is a full jazz standards album. Beautiful. They gave him instrumentation. Pianos were tuned.
And it's a gorgeous album, and we haven't gotten to that in this series yet. We will. We are going to spend much time on that album. But that same month, April of 1964, they released Marvin Gaye's Greatest Hits, and then April of 1964, they released Together with Mary Wells. And so the man says, at the time, Mary Wells and you were the only two artists on the Motown roster that had greatest hits albums. Is probably a commercial thing that they decided to have you to record a duet album. And Marvin just also, he said he couldn't sing, but it's like, okay, well, now, actually, okay, at this point, I'm going to be fair. I'm going to breathe a little bit. This is 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Six is the Mary Wells album into Marvin Gaye's career. Okay. Greatest hits. That doesn't count. We already know what a greatest hits is kind of actually the writing on the wall for in the music industry. So we don't count the album with Mary Wells. We don't count the greatest hits album. At this point in time, Marvin Gaye has released 1, 2, 3, 4 projects, okay? And he says he can't sing. Okay, I'm calming down, and I'm breathing a little bit, because I will let Marvin say that, okay? I'm going to let Marvin say that, because I'm going to go to my own language from the Soulful Moods of Marvin Gaye episode and how I said, and am I obsessed with Marvin Gaye? For 26 years, listening to him every day. Am I giving you a song a day of Marvin Gaye? Trying to. I get to it most days, unless I'm also recording and editing an episode or if I'm sick as hell, you know what I'm saying? But for the most part, I'm trying to give you a song a day of Marvin Gaye. I'm totally obsessed. I totally think Marvin Gaye is the best singer of all time. But that night that I sat through and I made video after video after video after video of every single song on the Soulful Moods of Marvin Gaye album that I put up onto the YouTube channel for you guys so that you can freely access that for yourself as well, because otherwise you have to pay $9 a month on Apple Music to have access to it online. The comment that I made is that were I a 14-year-old girl back in 1961 when that album was released and all the music of the time that I had surrounding me and access to, I don't know if I was down to ride after just listening to that first exercise from Marvin Gaye, because it was so out of this world. It was so Marvin Gaye, right? And so that is fair. And then it was just like, okay, Marvin, well, you just broke my heart because you said that about yourself, and I don't even appreciate that because you have already released When I'm Alone, I Cry, and that's an absolutely beautiful album, and you are singing your ass off on that, and I don't appreciate that, and I have, this year in 2019, been able to hear recorded live on stage, Marvin Gaye recorded live on stage, and every single song that you're singing on that is absolutely jamming, and you sound amazing, and how dare you, you know, you've given us stubborn kind of valor and pride and joy, and you can sing, you know what I mean? And I'm not having that. But it goes to what I said, that I don't know if I'm down to ride with Marvin like I am right now, if the very first project off of Marvin that I was able to hear and receive was his very first album. I made the point to say I'm so grateful that I got to start with What's Going On. Do you know what I mean? So, you know, I was hurt. I'm telling you, people, when I heard this last week, I was hurt. I was sitting there and I was hearing Marvin say that about himself, and I was hurt and I was like, well, fuck, dude, what is my podcast about? And I love Marvin's songs from that era. So I was hurt. Marvin hurt me, okay? I just had to listen to him keep talking for a few more seconds past that, because now, all right, I told you, I had paused it at 10 minutes and 49 seconds, and now it's paused at 11 minutes and 51 seconds, because he has elaborated a little bit, and he says that he was so young, and so there was purity in his voice, and that the listening audience, again, I'm paraphrasing, but at points in time, at little glimpses of time, in his vocal performances during that time, and we are talking just up through his fourth album out of the gate, that there were glimpses that the listening audience could catch of Marvin Gaye's purity. And they could say, you know, they could hear some things going on with Marvin Gaye's voice. Some growth going on with Marvin Gaye's voice. And then they could catch little glimpses of purity out of him because he was so young. And so that possibly they could feel like, oh, there's some hope for him, right? Like, I'm paraphrasing this, but I get it. Okay, because Marvin is saying this in 1976 after he's resting off of the I Want You release, and how I have an episode titled Marvin's Technique with That Thing. Because by 76, the voice is a thing, okay? It's a thing, and he has a technique with it. And it ain't nobody's game on the planet matching it. They wish. Homeboy, you wish. And that's a wish. You can make that wish. Blow out your candle. Okay? But you won't. You're not going to get there. You're not going to get there. Just needing to give you the memo. Okay? I'm not talking shit. It's fact. So, yes, let's let the master give some very vulnerable and pure critique of himself through 64. Okay, Marvin, fine, okay? But I'm sorry, we can talk about soulful moods of Marvin Gaye. I don't allow that for Some Kind of Fellow recorded live on stage or When I'm Alone, I Cry. I'm not taking those critiques on those albums. And I'll show you. We'll get to those albums and I will show you. No. That is not allowed. You don't get to talk like that about Marvin Gaye. I don't care if you are Marvin Gaye. Okay? You hurt me when you just now said that. But I'm going to calm down and I'm going to breathe a little bit, and I'm coming down off of level 25 because it's like, fine, Marvin, I can hear you tell me that your voice is 50% different. It's 50%. And he said improved. Okay. yes, it had a place to go to. It had a place to go to. It had a place to be tapped into. It had a confidence to be believed in. It had a confidence to be gained. You know, it had a technique to be sweated. So he did that. And yes, okay. Only, let me put it like, you know how it's like, you might be talking shit about your sister, and only, but you, I bet that not ever, I wish somebody else would ever try and talk shit about the people that only I can talk shit about. Well, it's like, look, I can't talk shit about Marvin Gaye. You can't talk shit about Marvin Gaye. And I'm sorry, I have a problem with Marvin Gaye talking shit about Marvin Gaye. But I guess Marvin Gaye is the only person that can talk shit about Marvin Gaye. It hurts me still. But I will allow it for 10 seconds, Marvin, because I very much needed you to clarify these things, okay? And then it just showed me that he was a very not arrogant person, right? Like, he was a very, you know what I'm saying? Like, that's humble. That's humility. That is very much being real aware of your room for opportunity. And, you know, not everybody has that ability. So that's a positive thing. That's a positive thing. It's a positive thing. It hurt me anyway. Okay? Let me listen to like the last couple of minutes of this episode. And I don't know if there will be anything else to need to speak to. But then we'll get into the next episode of this hour-long series here. Yes, there was something. Okay, so yeah, I had like 2.5 minutes to listen to. Marvin talks about how, and I believe that this was probably like a scene from those times, from those years of being there at Motown. And I love it. Marvin is very self-deprecating. Is that the word? It's just like, where, okay, like if you're going to tell a little story that involves like some negativity involving you, right? Like involving your part, but you don't try and sugarcoat that. Like, that's what I love. I really do get an impression about Marvin Gaye that he did not ever try to sugarcoat his own contributions to things. Like, he'd candidly explain how he fucked up in a situation. So he's explaining how, so this guy, you know, he's asking him questions and he's basically saying like, okay, then you worked with blah-da-da-da-da producer and blah-da-da-da-da producer. And did you feel like you were getting shifted around from producer to producer? And Marvin said that more than that, he felt like he was being puppeteered and that his, you know, he was just kind of being, again, like we spoke a couple minutes ago, dictated, you know, like his career was just being dictated to him. And so he explained how there was a time that he got into, and he was talking about Holland, Dozier, that's three people, right? So each person is one of those, their last names. And so I think he said Holland, one of the Hollands. He was recounting a session that he was there at Motown, and it was his turn to be up on the mic to record one of Holland's songs. And that Marvin wasn't ready to do it. And he was like, he was doing something else. And Marvin says, he's like, whatever I was doing was inconsequential. And he's like, and I should have been ready to record because the time was set and I was supposed to be there, you know, recording it at that time. And he's like, but I was there and I was doing something else that I just for, you know, a few minutes thought was more important. And so then he said, Holland went and told on him to Barry. Barry comes down, rips Marvin a new one. Marvin didn't appreciate that. So he is mad. And then he, Barry and Holland are going at it. And he's like, it was vicious and it was just awful and horrible. And he's like, we almost all three came to blows. And I've heard so many stories about that, of the times at Motown of Marvin almost coming to blows with people. And you know what? I love that. Stick the fuck up for yourself. Okay, let me just keep going and to explain why I love that. But he said, okay, so then, like, whatever. He's like, then he got in and he recorded the song or whatever. And the guy was like, gosh, you know, like after that story, he's like, can you remember what the song was? And okay, now I'm going to tell you something. And this is very, 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 very personal. And you might just kind of think like, this is, you're kind of weird. Like you're kind of a weird girl. And that's fine. You can think that about me. I am kind of a weird girl when it comes to Marvin. You know what I'm saying? Because Marvin is just like such a big, huge, important part of my life. And that can be kind of weird. Right? In this day and age, for this many years past his death, you know, I really was most exposed to his music since he has been passed away. It's kind of, I am weird for how much I am into Marvin. Okay. So, but I'm going to explain this to you anyway. And I don't really care if you think I'm weird. I'm proud of, I've told you this before, like I'm proud to be as obsessed about Marvin Gaye as I am. So the guy says, wow, can you remember what song that was? And Marvin's like, yeah, it was this song called I'll Take Care of You. I was like, I don't know if you remember it. He's like, it's a pretty good song. And he was like, at the end of the day, he's like, why that was so important, like why that particular song is so important is because, and just like the ugliness of how he got to the microphone to start singing that song, is that it really, that whole situation, he's like, it changed him. It shaped him. It made him become independent. You know, like he just kind of knew that sometimes he needed to stand his own, and it really got him minded of wanting to produce himself. Like that was kind of the turning point of him just wanting to produce himself. And so here's what I take. This is what I'm thinking must have kind of been going on at the, to cause that initial conflict that Marvin wasn't ready to get up onto the mic and start singing the song. He was there at the studio, right? It's not like he wasn't at the studio. He was there at the studio, but he just was doing something else. I think Marvin must have kind of been playing around with his own music, right? Like, and he was in the middle of doing that. And it wasn't just like, stop at this second because now it's time to come over and your session is, time is up to be at the mic. And so I think, you know, like if you're in the middle of an artistic flow like that. And that's what I'm saying. Like, I can't even imagine writing a song. I don't even know how you would go about doing that, right? So to be hearing music in your head, tinkering around with it, bringing it out in the middle of that creative process. And then just because at this minute, it's your time to be up on the thing. Like he wasn't, it just, he didn't want to turn off his own creative process at that point. So, you know, I was like, back up a little bit. I'll be there in a few minutes or whatever. But he said, like, it was that experience that just really got him minded to want to record his own music. Why this is weird? Okay, because I told you it was kind of weird. Is it two episodes ago now? So not the last episode, but the episode before that, I went off, right? I said, I'm sorry, I'm not sorry. And I was very, very, very blatant about my take. And I, you know what, that's what I've realized, like, as I've started to do this podcast, like, these aren't necessarily pent up. I think they are. I think they are kind of pent up things, but I just very freely let flow. Like, I obviously have huge issues with Ritz. I was just thinking about that a couple seconds ago as I was taking a second to pause from this. Well, actually, okay, I'm gonna explain that. It's because when I took a second to pause, and like, it's the segment that I was doing right before I'm doing this right now, like how I was saying that it hurt me to hear Marvin, you know, talking down on himself like that and his vocal abilities, but how for, you know, 10 seconds I can allow it because I can go back to my own previously recorded episode of The Soulful Moods of Marvin Gaye, and I can myself have said that I didn't know if I would be down to write after just hearing that project. Okay, so that's fair. That's Marvin's take. That's honestly my take, right? And then that just allowed me to know, it's like, you know what, guys? We are correct here. This project, this series, this podcast series, these episodes, they are correct. They're correct. When I, last weekend, got this corroboration from Marvin Gaye, kind of his take, a month or more after I released an episode, right? So I didn't say those things to you that I said to you about a month ago based on knowing that Marvin Gaye felt the same way. It's like, and like I said, if I am going to be like relating things to you that I'm alleging to you that Marvin Gaye's, please believe me. And let's do this exercise. I told you at the beginning of this, these four YouTube videos are on my YouTube channel, The Enduring Gifts of Marvin Gaye, in the, hold on, where did I just, I will tell you this again because I would like you to do this exercise, please. Listen to these four interviews. Marvin Gaye, movies, concerts, documentaries, and interviews. I have a playlist called that and they are in there. Listen to these episodes because you're going to hear Marvin saying these things. I am telling you, I'm making it very clear to you, I'm paraphrasing what he is saying, but listen to me and then go listen to these interviews where you can hear Marvin saying these things himself. That is the only way that I want to relay something to you that Marvin Gaye allegedly said. I need to hear Marvin say it himself. And I don't have a color on Marvin other than exaltation. Always process 9/10 of what you will read from Ritz with that filter. There's color. Yeah, I went in on Jan Gay. Pent up, I guess. I told you my bias is towards Marvin. But I felt a little bit bad after I released that episode. I struggled with that episode. It was real. I really feel those things. That is really the way that I feel. I feel that type of way. And I just released it and I told you I was judging. But I do that judgment. And so after I released the episode and I, you know, because I edited it and I got it down to where it's what you can hear. There was more. And I released the episode, right? And if anything, if I'm worried about anything, I'm worried about Marvin, you know, like, so that weekend, right? Because this happened over a weekend. Call it, say it, maybe it was a Friday that I released the episode or whatever, or Saturday morning that I released the episode or whatever, and then that weekend goes by, and just lo and behold, for the very first time in life, I am flipping through YouTube, and I think I was doing that search on unreleased Marvin Gaye in YouTube. And for the very first time in life, there was a song. It said like a rare soulful ballad of Marvin Gaye. And so I had no idea what I was about to hear. And I pushed play. And it was the song that Marvin Gaye recorded after
Holland went and told Barry on him, and he had to just, you know, stop whatever else he was doing and get up to the microphone and sing the song, I'll Take Care of You. After I released my little very blatant, bold, and just, I rep for what I say. Okay. I am not a scary bitch, dude. If I say it, we can talk about it again. Okay. We can. And like I said, if I was worried about anything, it was just kind of honoring Marvin's legacy and not ever wanting to disrespect Marvin. And just, if I was worried about a little teeny bit of anything, it was that. And then for the first time in life, that weekend, I heard Marvin's I'll Take Care of You song. So I feel okay. I feel okay. It might be a little weird to you, but things like that happen and have happened throughout my life so far. Just little special, my own little personal moments like that with Marvin. And they don't have to mean anything to you. It can be weird to you if they mean something to me. But I'm good. So I think that for right here, this actually could be enough that I will share, because yeah, I have shared with you everything that really hardcore jumped out to me from this episode series of interviews from 1976 with Marvin Gaye and Paul Gambaccini from BBC Radio 1, 1976. So the very first episode is 14 minutes long. The next one is 12 and 27, 12 and 59. And, oh, I thought there were four. Oh, there is another one. And then 15 minutes and 4 seconds. Listen to all of that. It's beautiful. It's Marvin Gaye talking. And he gives amazing, beautiful, gorgeous insight into his career, into who he is as a person, into what makes him tick, into his process artistically. And so I've done enough paraphrasing. I have it available for you. Please take a listen, hear him yourself. And like I said, if you want to have alleged things that Marvin Gaye said, please rely on Marvin Gaye's voice. It's beautiful. His talking voice is as beautiful as his singing. Okay? The best way to hear whatever supposedly Marvin Gaye said, let him tell you. So I'm going to call it a day on recounting this. I don't need to give you the next three videos there, but go ahead and listen to that. And then I just want to share something else that I have posted up on that specific playlist. And I've put it on the Pinterest page too. There is a 10 minute and 53 video of Nick Ashford and Valerie Simpson talking about Marvin Gaye. And there's a little title card on that. And it says that it was from that American Masters, that PBS documentary that I referenced many times. I think they had been interviewed. I don't know. I think they were included in that documentary, but these are definitely outtakes from that. But that's a beautiful conversation. I love what Valerie Simpson, I will say this, and I've mentioned Marvin like this before too. She said at one point, she just says, if she could have chosen anybody's throat to have on the planet ever, it would be Marvin Gaye. She was like, the things that he was able to technique with that thing. She's like, she would have Marvin Gaye's throat if she could have anybody's throat. And then I thought that I had put into this playlist as well. I'm not seeing it pop out. But there was an interview that Smokey Robinson gave on The Breakfast Club years back. And I watched it and I thought I saved it. I know, you know where I put it, and I maybe didn't put it on the YouTube channel. It's on my Pinterest board, in the videos board. It was just Smokey Robinson just doing an interview with The Breakfast Club. It's about his career. Actually, he does towards the end a little bit talk about Marvin, specifically about Marvin. You know what he just said? It's like he never imagined a time in life that he would be here and Marvin Gaye wouldn't be here. You know what I mean? Like he just never thought that him and Marvin wouldn't just be here together. Like He was never prepared for that. But he talks about the Motown Review times. He talks just a lot about what life was like growing up in the 60s like that as a black man. It was a very, very, very good interview. It's like over an hour long. They really, Smokey Robinson, you can tell, he's like one of those old people. Maybe he's like me. Or you can ask him one question, they can talk to you for an hour. So he was just giving some very detailed, in-depth, you know, just insights about his career at Motown, life in the 60s, just the music industry. It was very, very good. I'm going to have to find it. I don't know why I'm not seeing it here on the YouTube, but I know that I saved it to the Pinterest videos board. Yeah. Oh, and just guys, I'm having a blast. You know what? On the song of the day board, I am loving life. Just giving you guys the song of the day. I was listening to that. I was in just shuffle on that all day today. I want to be subscribed to my playlist. You know what I'm saying? It's like, can I subscribe to it? Shit. My playlist is hooked up. Okay. It is containing everything that I enjoy. So hold on, let me see how many songs we're up to right now. 79. I gave you guys yesterday The Dark Side of the World. Ooh, too cold. And I didn't even realize that Diana Ross did that song. That's actually the version of that song that was ever released. This is an unreleased take of Marvin doing it. I had never heard this. That song comes from, I told you in the previous episode, Love Starved Heart was a part of that little 4-disc box set that I bought when I got the Let's Get It On remaster. And that's what it's called, Love Starved Heart. It came out in 94. And it was a set of songs. Well, in 99, and I was just thinking like this, my grandma passed away in 99, and I guess just in 99, I wasn't really thinking about acquiring Marvin Gaye music as much. In 99, they re-released the Love Starved Heart disc and expanded it. And so they had like a disc 2 of it. That same time frame, this early 1960s vault stuff, unreleased, but now they were giving you like a second disc of it, and Dark Side of the World is on that. Because I'll tell you, the first time that I ever came across Dark Side of the World was when the very first day that I set up my playlist in Rhapsody back when I was 34. For my 34th birthday, I gave myself a subscription to Rhapsody, and I created my 7-hour-long Marvin Gaye playlist. And for the very first time, that was when I heard Dark Side of the World. And I remember hearing it then, and I was just like, and I thought it looked like it was the album cover of Love Starved Heart, and I was just like, how come I never heard this before? But last night is when I got that detail that in 99, they like, of course, they re-released again a previous vault release, but they had expanded it. So Marvin recorded that Ashford and Simpson song, never was released, but it's beautiful. It's beautiful. I've given you Nightlife. I gave you Give a Little Love. I attempted a little GIF work on there. It's a Marvin and Tammy song. So there's just some GIF. I just wanted to let you guys see Marvin and Tammy singing. Of course, they're not singing that song, but I wanted you to be able to visually see Marvin and Tammy singing. And I tried to slow it down to the pace and the tempo of the song. I'm very proud of it. I think it's very cute. I very much enjoy just watching them sing. I've given you That's the Way Love Is. Now, actually, let me point that one out to you. That, and I have that one saved in the song of the day and also in the Marvin Gaye collection. I swear to God, I have known for all of my life that I've been listening to this song, and the first time I ever heard it is on the Marvin Gaye collection, that anytime I hear That's the Way Love Is, that's not the song, right? That's not the way the song goes. There's more to the song than that. The version of the song That's the Way Love Is from the Marvin Gaye collection is an alternate take. Listen to That's the Way Love Is. You maybe think you've heard that song before hundreds of times. Please listen to my video of it on the Song of the Day, or you find it in the Marvin Gaye collection. It is an alternate take. It has background vocal from start to finish. From the like opening beginning of Marvin starting to sing, he's got background vocal with him the whole entire song. Any other take of that song that it does not sound the same. It's not the same song. I confirmed that for myself. I've given you and unreleased. Without you, my life is lonely. And I'm, okay, now I'm going to stop after I get to this. And I will end it on this. And, you know, we're going to circle back. And I haven't pointed this out to you for a few episodes. Maybe I can't remember, whatever. I'm saying it again, but I'm not going to make this long. The 20 seconds. And I'm just, it's the 20 seconds. There is a video in the song of the day. And it's 24 seconds long because I give you 2 seconds of silence. Get ready. Get yourself ready. Get your mind right. Get your mind open. Get ready. Then I simply give you the 20 seconds. You know what it is. If you are on this episode, like I said, I'm going to just, I don't want to be abusive about this. I don't want to be aggressive about it. But if I talk about it so much, I need to stop talking about it and I just need to let you hear it. So I have given you the 20 seconds. Just check it out. Just check it out. It is itself. It is itself. It doesn't speak because I told you there are no words. But I included the last 3 words just so we can be clear because it's Marvin and he's asking you to do it for him. Dig it, everybody. So 20 seconds. I'm very proud of that. It's beautiful artwork. It's just, yes. So yeah, we're building up the song of the day. I will be getting you a couple songs over this weekend. Like I say, it's the name of the I try to get to it every day, dude. I really legitimately do try. But we're going to get it there, right? Like, it's building and it's growing. And like I said, I was listening to that shit all day today. I just put it on shuffle, dude. And I'm like, fuck, Jessica, I want to subscribe. Shit. Like, if I didn't just make this shit, how do I subscribe to it? So please take advantage of that. That is all for you. And it's for me too. But, you know, I have it. I can listen to it anytime. That's why I'm sharing it with you. So, yeah. All right. We'll see. I just, like, guys, I don't really want to go into these songs from, Let's Get It On, but we're going there. You know what I'm saying? Like, that just goes, that's a beautiful thing. It's like, that's how connected to them. That's how just reflections of life they are. And so they are the absolutely most beautiful gems. So we're going there. We're going there. I just need to get ready. So it might be a little bit of a lag, you know, and maybe it will. Guys, I'm sick as a dog. It is coming up to be the holidays. And, you know, so we may have a little bit of a lag, but I'm not going anywhere. Check for me on Pinterest. Check for me on the song of the day. Those are the things I will keep going. If you don't hear my voice, you will be getting product from me there. So love you guys and talk to you soon. Bye-bye. Well, friends, that's it for this episode. Did we have fun? I had fun. Subscribe to our show so you never miss the enduring gifts of Marvin Gaye. Follow us on Pinterest, pinterest.com/MarvinGaye_enduring_gifts. There, we are up to 45,000 views per month. I have thousands of images and videos of Marvin. Also, check out the YouTube channel, Marvin Gaye's Enduring Gifts. I'm building the Song of the Day playlist there. It's my ultimate goal to become your free online Marvin Gaye listening resource. So, as always, we really appreciate your listening support. Give us subscribes, give us likes, and thank you for listening.